Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Chag Sameach Hanukkah today. We are in the middle of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a very special time, a lovely time, especially with all the children. And we've already had a Hanukkah scavenger hunt at our house. We've had an epic dreidel game, and we've had another epic Hanukkah dance party to the Maccabees. We've been doing lots of things, lots of latkes and whatnot. Tonight after Shabbat, I hope that you'll be able to gather around around the menorah, you know, with family and with friends and around the warmth of the flames and sing together and be with one another together and bring some of the Hanukkah light into this world and into your world and into your heart. I want to share the Hanukkah story, but maybe a little bit of the real Hanukkah story. What's behind the Hanukkah story? You guys know the children's books and how they present the story. There are the evil Greeks who invade and they take over the temple. Judah Maccabee leads a resistance movement, and against all odds, he defeats the Greek armies. You know, they find the temple desecrated. They rededicate the temple with the lighting of the menorah, where one day's supply lasts for 8 days. And then, of course, we celebrate. But is this the real story of Hanukkah? Maybe it is, in part. But what we don't hear about are some of the things behind the scenes, which I find fascinating. We don't hear that in the second century BCE, the Greeks, these evil Greeks were actually the creators of the world's most developed civilization that part of the world had ever known. You know, art and sculpture and archaeology and poetry and satire and biography and history, you know, all these things were flourishing at that time. Philosophy and science were developed in ways that were not matched for more than 1,000 years. Hellenistic society was modern. It was seen as advanced. It tore down barriers between people. It sought to transcend ethnic and cultural differences. You know, this all sounds great, doesn't it? It was a melting pot, seeking universalism, pluralistic society. This was the Greeks. The expanding Greek culture was the center of the world. It filled with, had gymnasiums and public buildings, and it had values, and it had ideas, and it had institutions. Hellenistic influence had spread over the entire Middle East. It was exciting. And Jews were influenced, and cities were established in the land of Israel. And what happened was a new Greek-speaking, culturally Hellenistic Jewish religion emerged. Does that sound a little familiar? A Hellenistic Jewish religion emerged. And so the real Hanukkah story is a divide, a story of division within the Jewish people. It's a story of a struggle with ideology and a struggle with acculturation, a struggle with aggressive assimilation. The temple was funded by the Greeks, the Jewish temple, and the priests made allegiances with the Hellenists. The Hellenized Jewish temple priests helped build a gymnasium in Jerusalem, and the Festival of Hercules was funded by Hellenized Jews who were placed in charge of the temple. The temple became a political site for Jewish and Greek relations. Sounds exciting, right? This was modern progress. Jews naturally thought that they would no longer be persecuted if they were modernized and assimilated. We've heard that line as well. The old Jewish ways were outdated and they were embarrassing, and groups of Jews arose who favored aggressive assimilation. Now, the book of Maccabees says that Jews even submitted themselves to uncircumcision, which is a painful operation to remove the marks of circumcision. I don't know what that looks like, but I don't want to know. Don't think about it. But the idea is that many Jews, they just didn't want to be Jewish anymore. And others, this is interesting, others wanted to be Jewish, but Jewish in a Hellenized, non-intrusive, and assimilated way, so that others wouldn't know. In other words, to be Jewish, but not so much that it makes us stand out. And we can understand this, you know, I mean, we really can. This is our American Jewish story. Now, the Hanukkah story continues predictably. Antiochus III dies, Antiochus IV comes into power. The comfortable, assimilated Jewish life comes to an end, and Antiochus IV has a move now, a political move to purify Judaism. And we hear the all too familiar line, "Death to all Jews who do not cease from observing the outdated Jewish religion." Now, A statue of Zeus is erected in the temple, and pigs are symbolically offered on the altar as a statement. But here's the thing. Antiochus was not trying to impose his own faith. He was trying to universalize and modernize Judaism for the day. He was pluralistic. He thought he was saving Jews from the religious relics of the past and helping them. He saw himself as a hero, as did many assimilated Jews. They looked up to him. And so the resistance movement came from the least sophisticated of the Jewish people, from the farmers, from the poor people, the ones that didn't have any association socially with the Greeks. And so this wasn't a battle just between Jews and Greeks. This was a battle between the Jews. And in 167 BCE, a priest named Mattathias Maccabee, he got fed up. But get this, who did he stab? He stabbed a Jew who sacrificed a pig on the altar. Do you know that? He stabbed a Jew who sacrificed a pig on the altar. At Mattathias, he fled with his sons to the hills. They gathered a small group of followers. In the wake of his father's death, Judah Maccabee, the son, began a 3-year-long guerrilla war against the Hellenists, including the Jews. Now, the actual politics here were very complicated, as you can imagine. But basically, the Maccabees caused enough of a ruckus that the king decided that his troops would be better served elsewhere, and he pulled his troops and he gave the temple back to the Jews. However, the Jewish priesthood was so assimilated that they chose to leave the statue of Zeus in the temple. Judah Maccabee regathered his followers again, and then they struck Jerusalem, driving the Jewish Hellenized priesthood out of the temple. That's the victory. And so on the 25th of Kislev, they rededicated the temple, and the 8-day event, which was modeled after the celebration of Sukkot, was centered on lighting of the menorah, symbolizing God's presence inside of the temple. And then we find an enduring tradition, which is first recorded in the Mishnah in the 3rd century, that holds that a miracle took place here, that on the day, one day's supply of oil lasted for the entire 8 days of the dedication that they had. And so here today, we celebrate the Maccabean victory. We remember the miracle of the oil. We light an 8-branched Hanukkah. So what is the Hanukkah story for us today? What is the meaning of the Hanukkah flame within the true story with all of these details and all this information? You know, I want to suggest today, we could go in a lot of directions, but the menorah is supposed to be the enduring light that doesn't burn out. The menorah is the enduring flame that doesn't burn out. That's the idea. And there's an idea that every Jewish soul is like a light. It's like a flame. And like the Shamash candle, that the menorah that passes its light to the other candle, so too we are like a Shamash candle to pass on our Jewish light to others and to our children and to pass it on in this dark and broken world that we live in. But as the Jewish people assimilate and we become less Jewish, then that light becomes dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. I mean, check out some of these statistics from 2014. The Jewish people make up less than 0.2% of the world's population. In the mainstream secular Jewish community, the average birth rate is 1.29 per family, and the assimilation rate is 49%. So at that rate, out of every 100 Jews in our generation, there will be 41 Jews in the second generation, 17 Jews in the third generation, 7 Jews left in the fourth generation. Now, the Reform movement rivals that with the remaining 10 Jews after 4 generations in the statistics. Now, Michael Steinhardt said that all would agree that Jews in our world are demographically endangered because of these statistics. Of course, God will prevail, but Satan is doing everything in his power to diminish the light that we've been given to carry. He really is. And more insidious in a way than persecution and genocide, as horrible as those things are, is Satan coming from the inside and ever so gradually helping Jews to feel that they don't want to be Jews anymore. See, it's very sneaky, you know, the insider plan. I'm not suggesting here that Messianic Jews should be Hanukkah zealots with pitchforks and swords. And, you know, we probably wouldn't relate to the Maccabees at all. I mean, they were like really strict. In today's Judaism, there isn't one kind of Jewish ideal. There isn't one traditional Jew that out-Jews all the other kinds of Jews. I'm a modern Jew. Look, I am. We're all modern Jews. You know, going back to the shtetl isn't an option. And it isn't even an ideal. But the lesson of the enduring flame is about passion. passing on the flame to our children and to the next generation. Passion for being, passion for living Jewish, passion for the God-given call that we have to maintain and to continue our Jewish identity. And then what makes us Messianic Jews different from other Jews is that we follow Yeshua, our Messiah. And the fact that we know the most important Jew who ever walked this world might make us, in terms of passion, a bit more like a Maccabee than a Hellenized Universalist. And our passion for Yeshua drives our passion for being Jewish. And our passion for being Jewish drives our passion for Yeshua. Because he's the Jewish heartbeat. He is our passion. And we can't remove the heart from the body. Yeshua is the center of our Jewish experience. And ultimately, there really is, if you boil it down, no Judaism apart from him. And so if you think about it, Messianic Jews, one day we should have the lowest assimilation rates. But of course, there's a lot of history we're up against, and we understand that. We don't judge each other, but we understand. But because of the history, Jews have seen us as a threat, Messianic Jews, because historically Yeshua has meant the doorway out of Judaism for so many. But it isn't supposed to be that way. And in a way, the beginnings of the modern Messianic Jewish movement is a movement where Yeshua seems to be finding those of us Jews who are kind of on our way out in some way and helping us to find a way back in with him. He's starting like a Baal Teshuva movement in a way, like a returning to Judaism movement, starting on the outside in and transforming it from the inside. And that's what he came to do. That's what he said he came to do. Because once we know Yeshua, our shamash, if you will, our light of the world, he's in our soul. And once Yeshua lights our soul, we rediscover the menorah, our Jewish soul. And then we must hold on and fight for both. And so we need to be Maccabees for Yeshua as Jews. We need to stand with him in our Jewish identity because it's the same passion and it's the same flame. I wanted to take a moment here, if I could, to honor Mara. In my eyes, Mara is a modern messianic Maccabee. I really feel that way. Mara moved to Israel 2 years ago in order to gain citizenship. However, if I understand the story correctly, she stood for Yeshua as a Jewish woman and was denied citizenship simply because of her faith in Yeshua and her Messianic Jewish identity. And she made an appeal with others, like supporting you, to the Israeli Supreme Court. And she made the claim that she was still Jewish as a follower of Yeshua. And she was subjected to investigation and harsh criticism and some really, really hard stuff. And in the end, the court denied her citizenship because of her faith. And then she was given just 2 weeks to leave the country after building friendships and making Israel her heart and her home for 2 years. I want to suggest that we're here struggling with you in this, but I want to suggest that your struggles are not in vain. You've encouraged many of us through this. And you know, just think of all the people who had to think deeply and wrestle with her story. The outrage that so many who are even not Messianic Jewish felt about this decision, which I imagine had more to do with a deeply ingrained and complex political pressure than anything else. But God is at work behind the scenes. And I believe that her sacrifices and her commitment to Yeshua, regardless of the cost, will play a significant role in normalizing Yeshua faith among our Jewish people and in the land. I really do. So Mara, thinking back to the Hanukkah story, you're a modern Messianic Maccabee. I really think so. And you may have lost this battle, at least for now, but you've advanced the war. So we stand with you, and we hope that you can become family and a home for here could be a home for you too, at least while you're here. So yeah, so welcome. And give her a big welcome when you see her today. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So this Hanukkah, let us remember who we are and who we're called to be this Hanukkah. We're in the middle of a great awakening here in the body of Messiah, and I want you to be encouraged. Mark Ledoux once aptly said, Messianic Judaism is the tip of the spear. And the first in modern history to hold the two flames together, nurturing and strengthening that light within every Jewish soul that gives us passion for being and for living Jewishly, along with the light of Yeshua, the true light of the world, the true light of Israel. And so we need to hold on to these two until they become one flame that we can hand down to our children. And just to close, we've seen glimpses of that here. This reminds me of a time at Camp Olador a few years ago. Our Messianic Jewish camp was invited to lead a Havdalah service for our non-Messianic Jewish host camp. And our group was in the center of a circle surrounded by several hundred of their campers. And to begin the ceremony, their rabbi and I united our Havdalah candles together into one flame. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture of this. Be encouraged that, you know, we need to hold fast to the light inside, the light of the menorah, which always endures with passion. And as we see in Yochanan, as we read today, I wonder, Yeshua went to Jerusalem during Hanukkah. I wonder if he saw the great Hanukkah in Jerusalem and saw the lights, and that's what inspired him to say, you know, I am the light of the world. Whoever will follow me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of day. And so today, this Hanukkah, let us burn for Yeshua's light, and let us do our part to share that light with the world. Shabbat Shalom. Chag Sameach. Happy Hanukkah.
Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. In the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Know your name and study your Torah, for Messiah.